Welcome to Your Emotions as Spiritual Guides with Eileen Dillon. Eileen is the emotional pro, and to prove it, she even has a website at emotionalpro.com. Eileen is a licensed clinical social worker. She's a therapist, and she is the host of a long-standing radio show that you can check out at emotionalpro.com. I've been on the radio show, and I've also had Eileen featured on my seminars, so we trade back and forth. I really admire her work. She is she's certainly an expert on emotions and what they mean and how to manage them and what to do about them. But she's also very, very articulate about it. So I appreciate that most about her. So today, Eileen's going to talk to us about our emotions as spiritual guides, including what makes emotions important in conscious living and what is their true role, that emotions are signals and tools, and they're kind of a user's manual, and how to work with this user's manual, and spiritual principles at work in emotion-based relationships. So, Eileen, welcome.
Thank you, David. What a nice introduction. I'm very delighted to be here.
Where do you want to start?
I just want to start off saying how excited I am to be talking about emotions, because I know that when people learn, when they learn what emotions are all about and what they're saying and how to work with them, their emotions never let them down. They're available 24/7. And emotions are the doorway to our intuition, to the knowing of our soul. And they're the key to creation, like Greg Braden in his ancient method of prayer. He says if you want to create something in your life, you have a thought, you energize it with an emotion, and that leads to the feeling of what it will be like when you are where you want it to go. Therefore, emotions stand out as the energy or the fuel for creating life, including conscious relationships. And that's where I wanted to start, by just saying I'm so excited to be talking about this topic.
Eileen, you used the words emotions and feelings in the same sentence. Are they different?
I tend to like to use emotions. Sometimes I fall back to using feelings. It's more like an old habit. I think I'd like to talk about emotions because emotions are a specific thing. They are energy in a certain form.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so emotions and feelings are the same thing.
They're interchangeable when you're listening to me.
Okay.
But they're vitally important in relationships of all kinds. We are all born with emotions. And as I mentioned, they're with us 24/7. And relationships, interestingly enough, stimulate emotions to arise in us, creating the stuff of life. Whenever we have an experience, emotions come up and we have an opportunity to look at what's going on, to understand things that may have been hidden, and to make changes. And emotions are by definition spiritual because they are given to us as part of being in a body. And I'll just go on here. Many people today are saying that emotions arise because of the stories we tell ourselves. If I tell myself I'm a victim, then I'll experience the emotion of oppression. But if I tell myself I'm a lovable human being, I'll probably experience the emotion of love and so forth. And this is definitely true. Emotions do arise from the stories that we tell ourselves, but the stories are not always clear. We don't always know what those stories are because we may have absorbed them when we were infants. And it is true also, as Eckhart Tolle says, that you can sit with your emotions and they will dissipate. But in all of that, it's important to know that you can't really ignore emotions and you can't get rid of them because they're part of us. And a principle that operates on the earth is that in order to get past something, we have to go through it. And so in order to deal with our emotions, whatever their origin, we need to go through them in some way, either by sitting with them or by understanding and using them the way they've been given to us to use. And so it's really important to me that I not be deprived of my emotions because they're my tools. Now, each emotion carries a different signal. It tells us what action is called for in a particular situation. Love, for example, David, what signal does love give you? What action does it tell you to take?
What actions is the feeling or emotion of love telling us to take?
When you feel love towards somebody, what action do you feel like taking?
I feel like getting closer.
That's it. That's it. You got it.
Okay.
And so each emotion has a signal. And in my bonus section, I have available a list of 7 common emotions and their signals. We won't go through all 7 today, but I want people to have that. And so when we allow ourselves to feel the emotion, hear the signal, act on the signal, learn from what came up, and then let it go, that's when we grow and evolve. And that's how our emotions become our user's manual. Everybody wants to have a user's manual. Why wasn't I born with a user's manual, we say. And in fact, we were, and it's emotions. And the emotions tell us, be careful here, get closer here, make a change over here, get creative there. That's what emotions are doing all the time. So when we're talking about emotions as spiritual guides, there's a backdrop for that I'd like to give, and that is that I like to look at our earth as a giant school to which all of us have come in order to grow and develop. And in the school, every experience we have is an opportunity to learn, especially our relationships. Because we stay in relationships long enough and do enough things so that inevitably emotions and issues arise. And that reveals to us that what hasn't become conscious yet, what lurks in our subconscious minds, and we can work with those and clean up all of those things, and it makes it very easy to find those things. And I want to talk a little bit about marriage tied into this. Now, marriage, I'm not necessarily talking about the legal type of marriage, but the marriage, the connection, the commitment. There's a spiritual definition of marriage that I work with, and that is that one whole complete unit and another whole complete unit come together to form something more, which is a unity. And when you're working with emotions in relationships, when you're working with your marriage or your conscious relationship, and this can apply with coworkers and children as well, you need your unit self to be as clear and complete as possible. And I think a lot in spiritual relationship we talk about going back to the unit self and making sure that the unit self is good, and then bringing what we have as a whole complete person back to the unity. And that certainly holds true with emotions. Trying to work out your emotions in the moment, it makes it too easy for you to manipulate or try to manipulate the other person or not get to the bottom of what's going on with you. So the true purpose of relationships, as I'm sure everyone on this call would agree, is for our own growth and our own enlightenment. And since we are one, then we're also talking about the enlightenment of everybody. And it's really great that the design is such that when we look after our own growth, everybody else's growth improves also. And so the best way to create this growth while we're here on the earth is through the friction and the stimulation that intimate relationships give us. They're like a pressure cooker, and we get reflected, stimulated, irritated, fed in relationships, and they're all opportunities for growth. So I'm looking to have people resurrect emotions and allow them their proper place, which is as tools helping us in our growth and giving us the signals practically and spiritually, and to recognize that they're energy, they're gifts, and they assist with the proper conduct of our lives here on Earth.
And when you talk of spiritual growth, what's your definition of spirituality now? When you talk about emotions as spiritual guides and spiritual growth, what do you mean?
Now, that is a question I didn't consider before here. How do I say spiritual?
So the connection between emotions and spirituality would be what?
Well, the connection is that is to think of myself as something larger and as connected to something larger, and keep that as a constant knowing, so that even if I'm working on my anger or my rage, which is being small, I can use it in a spiritual way. I can use that rage or that anger in a spiritual way by keeping in mind, by staying conscious, that I am also something bigger, that this is a tool that helps me to get back to that something bigger, and that that's where I'm going, to the something bigger. I'm not here to get lost in my rage or my hurt.
Okay, so then the emotion would be the stimulus, the energy towards growing into something bigger.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, great.
And the body is really important in that, too. It's been demonstrated that without a body, David, people lose their sense of self. And we need our sense of self. That's why working with the unit self is so important. Because I think sometimes spiritual ideas get in our way. We get esoteric. We think, well, that I'm not being spiritual if I feel this way. And the body helps bring us back to what is real, who we really are. And it's not unspiritual to have emotions. Emotions are part of us, and every part of us is spiritual. And I want to take a minute, if I may, to talk to you about animal emotions and what they teach us human animals.
Animal emotions.
Animal emotions. I learned so much. On my program, Full Power Living, we had Jeffrey Mason, who's a best-selling author of a book, several books, but the one that we were focusing on is When Elephants Weep. And what Jeffrey did is he collected stories of animal emotion from around the world and demonstrated in lovely, lovely stories that animals feel compassion, that they can experience and enjoy beauty, that they can mourn. And as he pointed this out, it became clear that animals have a certain way of working with emotions that is a very direct way, and it can teach us a lot. What animals do is they have an experience. They experience something, and it creates a feeling or an emotion in them, and they react and take action on it immediately. I'm sure all of us have had the opportunity to see a dog or a cat who snarls and lashes out, and then a minute later is sitting around licking themselves as if nothing happened. And the reason for that is because the last thing that emotions do, that animals do with emotions, is they turn them loose. And that's the part that humans have a really hard time with. And turning them loose is what forgiveness is all about. Animals also demonstrate the spiritual principle that we have power in the present moment. So that's something that we need to do with our emotions, too. When they come up, we need to deal with them in the present moment because they're giving us information. And we humans have a tendency to ruminate over the past. And I think it's really important to realize that when we ruminate on things like that, when we hold on to angers or hurts or jealousies, we're actually depriving ourselves of power, because power is in the present.
Power is in the present. I'm sitting with that. That's a very spiritual concept as well, because you can only experience your emotions in the present. You can only really live in the present.
And you only have power in the present. And I find as a therapist, I don't know if you do, David, but I find that a lot of times people in relationship try to, they feel something and they're reacting to something, but they try to put it off in terms of dealing with it or making a change. You know, they disqualify their own emotions or any of a number of things that they do. In reality, if I go sit with my unit self and work with my emotion, and then wherever that takes that, I share that with my partner.
Eileen? Well, did we lose Eileen? Hang on.
Hey, baby, you there?
Yeah.
So, hey, guys, I opened up the line because it looks like Eileen dropped off.
We see that, you know. She'll come back on.
Well, looks like Eileen dropped off, and hopefully she'll be calling back in a second, and I can go ahead and call her. So, Eileen, are you there? Well, we'll just have to hang out a sec. So, I'm calling Eileen right now. Hello, Eileen?
David? David?
Well, there you are.
Yeah, I lost some power here, so I apologize for that.
You lost power in your phone? You lost power in your house?
In the house.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened. We live near a busy street that sometimes people hit telephone poles in.
Oh, my. Well, all I'm right. Glad you're able to find a way to get back in.
Absolutely. And I wanted to talk about what you can do through partnership with emotions in order to help yourself grow and to make your relationship work better.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping you're ready for that.
I'm ready.
All right. So the thing that we can do is we can call on our partner and pay attention in working with our partner to help us in our growth. And that also supports conscious relationship and spiritual relationship. For example, let's talk anger. Now, in my understanding, the universal cause of anger is that I have a picture of how things are supposed to be in the world, and it's an inaccurate picture because if it gets violated, like, for example, David, I'm married to you, and I have this idea that when you come home from work, the first thing you're supposed to do is come in and greet me and give me a kiss. And you don't do that, I will feel angry with you because my idea of how things are supposed to be has gotten violated. And also, if I think that you should not bother me for the first 15 minutes when you get home and you should go cool down yourself or change your clothes or whatever, and you come in to greet me, I can feel angry about that too because that will violate my picture. So either I think you should do something and you don't, or I think you should not do something and you do. And that will occasion me getting angry. So what's the signal, then, of anger? The signal is, to me, the unit person, the signal is that I
have an incorrect picture about how things are supposed to work in the world, and I need to change it. So I need to go work with myself. Let me give you a little story, which I may have told you before, David, but I hope you'll bear with me. I once gave a class at the Civic Center in Marin County, California, during lunchtime for the Civic Center employees. And it was a class on anger, and there was a woman in her 50s who was in the class, and about the third of eight sessions, she put up her hand, and she said, "I'll buy all this stuff you're talking about with anger if you can help me solve my problem." So I said, "Well, what's your problem?" And she said, "It's my mother. Every Sunday, I go to church, I meet my mother at church, I bring her home with me, and by Sunday night, I am ready to kill that woman. It's because she criticizes me. She says things like, 'Oh, I don't remember that we ever made mashed potatoes like that. Do you, dear?'" And, you know, people were laughing in the class, and I said, "Really? Well, how long has your mother been criticizing you?" And she said, "All my life." And I said, "Well, the first thing you need to do is face the fact. You think your mother should not criticize you. You're not facing the fact. That's what your mother does. That's what she's good at. So face the fact your mother's going to criticize you." Now, how many times in a Sunday afternoon does your mother criticize you? And she said, "At least five." And I said, "All right, this week I want you to go home and I want you to take a little piece of paper, and every time your mother criticizes you on Sunday, I want you to just put a mark on the paper. And if your mother doesn't criticize you at least 10 times, your job is to get angry with her. Now come back next week and tell us what happens." Well, she came back the next week, and she said that she never could get angry with her mother. Her mother only criticized her four times, but she was laughing so hard every time she put a mark on the paper. It's like, come on, this is what you're supposed to do, that she couldn't get angry with her mother. And we talked about the fact that when you face fact, look at something squarely for what it is, it frees you, and also that she was changing the energy she had around her mother's behavior. Well, we went on till the last week, the eighth week, and just about the end of the class, I looked at her and I said, "Now, before we end the class, we have to find out what happened with the criticism." And she looked at me blankly and she said, "What criticism?" And I said, "You know, your mother, the mashed potatoes, the criticism on Sunday." And she said, "Oh, she doesn't do that anymore." Okay? So the woman changed her idea of what her mother should do. She changed her shoulds. And she started putting out different energy. Her mother's energy didn't get fed, and the whole thing dropped. And so we can work with one another in our conscious relationships that way. We can take the anger that we feel, work with it. You know, my shoulds have been violated. What are they? Can I change them? Can I give them up? What would I like to put in their place? And then go back and tell our partner what we learned. Now, another thing that you can do is to ask somebody to help you change your behavior. Now, I have a daughter who's now 38, but when she was about 10 years old, I had the family method of child intervention. That was to start a lecture and go on and on and on. And I could see my daughter's eyes glazing over, but I couldn't seem to stop myself. So one day I asked her if she would be my partner. "Would you help me? Because I know that you know I'm doing this, and I know I'm doing it, but I don't seem to stop." And so we agreed on a phrase. The phrase was, "I got it, Mom." And the minute I heard that phrase, I was to stop. That was my signal. And so we did it. I started on one of my lectures. She looked at me sweetly and said, "I got it, Mom." And it was amazing because I was immediately embarrassed. It wasn't like we didn't know about it before, but somehow having it there between us, I was so embarrassed, I never did it again. It stopped me cold. And that can be done in your conscious and partner relationships also. You have any comment on that?
Wow, those are great stories. Man, oh man! So it sounds like, you know, you're saying that when we identify the reason for the emotion, you know, the purpose of it, then we can do something about it. So the emotion is signaling us. So that woman's anger towards her mother for being criticized was signaling that woman that she needed to take back her power, to react differently, to, you know, so it wasn't a, most people will blame the source of the anger.
Of course, yes.
And so what's and the, I'm just wondering, you know, what's the trick? I mean, if the average person is angry, it's certainly hard enough to pull back and take responsibility and say, okay, this is all about me. What's my anger telling me right now? Do you have a trick or a tip about that?
Well, yes, something that I use in therapy, which is, you know, I tell people these things when I do therapy to prepare their mind for how the system works. Then the person may say, well, that's very difficult to do. And I will say to them, I understand that it's difficult to do, and really, you don't have to work with this. You don't have to look at your shoulds. You don't have to change them. But the universe has a particular guarantee, and the guarantee is that until you do look at it, until you do grow, it'll just keep presenting it to you over and over and over again. So the motivating factor is, do you really want your life to be different, or do you want to keep doing the same old thing? And there's an absolute guarantee if you don't make a change inside of yourself, you will be doing the same thing over and over and over again. That's been highly motivating to me.
Yeah.
I don't like staying stuck in the same patterns. And
so, Eileen, we have some feedback from the listeners that you they'd like you to talk louder.
Okay.
Any way you can do that?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Is that better?
Well, since the since your power went out, I imagine you changed your phones, and now
I did.
Now you're not coming across as strongly.
Ah, all right. Well, I'll speak very loudly. I grew up on a farm. I know how to do that.
Okay. And we also have a couple of questions that came in. Would you like to address those now or later?
I think I'd like to address them later if we can.
Yeah, okay.
All right. I want to go to the third thing. Character is formed by living according to your ideals and principles. So when you identify what your ideals and principles are and you share those with your partner, particularly when they have to do with emotion, they are very powerful ways of helping you to grow. And I have a quick little example. I have an adopted daughter. I adopted my son's daughter when she was my husband's daughter when she was 13. And she's an exceptional person, but she turned 13 shortly after I became her adoptive mother, and she came to me one day and she said, I've been thinking about what kind of a teenager I want to be, and I've decided I don't want to be one of the difficult ones. And I appreciated that, and I said to my husband, we'll see about that. But because this person lives according to her ideals and principles, maybe three times, she's now 21, maybe three times in her adolescence, she went awry, and I just looked at her and said, oh, I thought you weren't going to be one of the difficult ones, and she said, I forgot, I'm sorry, and she changed right away. So sharing your ideals and principles, especially around your partner, you know, like, I don't like getting angry with you, and so my principle or what I'm going to do from now on or what I'm going to attempt to do from now on is this, and then your partner can remind you if you get off track. Now, another thing that you can do is to, when you have difficulties, you only focus on changing your own part, and loneliness is a really good example of this. Now, the signal of loneliness is that you have more energy going out than you have coming in. And early on in my marriage, I remarried about 11 years ago, early on I found myself, even though I was in a marriage after 20 years of being alone, I found myself being lonely. And I realized it was because I was putting more energy out than bringing it back in. So I would just go and ask my husband, give me a hug, talk to me, and he kindly offered that to me. But I also can take that emotion of loneliness and determine what I can do to bring energy in on my own. For me, for example, I could go garden or read something spiritually oriented. And so it's another thing that you can do is to focus on changing your part, and the signal of the emotion, like loneliness, shows you what you need to do, tells you what you need to do.
So now, with anger, it's telling you that you have a should operating that needs to change.
Correct.
And with loneliness, you're experiencing more energy going out than is coming in, and
right.
That's a signal that you can do something about it. Can you speak to some of the other emotions and what they're telling us?
Well, sure. Hurt is an interesting one. Hurt is not an acceptable emotion in our culture. If a woman says she's hurt, oh, that's just like a woman. If a man says he's hurt, what a wuss. You know, we don't really accept it. And so that puts us in a funny position. We usually express hurt. People usually express hurt when they're not feeling it and fail to express it when they are. And interestingly, hurt is always under anger. We feel hurt when our idea of how the world is pans out not to be true, all right? Now, what that means is that people usually manipulate with hurt. That's why they profess to it when they're not really, oh, you know, you left your dishes on the side of the sink, David, and that just hurt me, you know? Now, aren't you going to be the scum of the earth if you do that again, right?
But it's a little guilt-inducing there.
Yeah, it's used manipulatively. And I should mention, too, that on the bonus section, I wrote an e-article that's available for a nominal fee on guilt in conscious relationships, how it doesn't work and why it doesn't work, and the fact that guilt is not even a real emotion. So I won't go into that, but that's there, along with this fabulous CD that we put together. A lot of the participants in your summit are quoted on that, David, so be sure to get it yourself. All these are quotes from times when they appeared on my radio program, Full Power Living, and they talk about what consciousness is and how to utilize and work with consciousness in relationships. It's an hour-long MP3 download. And I also offer my booklet on energy draining, which to me is a fantastic thing. Energy draining is what most people refer to as manipulation, but I talk about it on a larger scale. So I just want to mention that's there. Jealousy. Jealousy is another interesting one. Would you believe that jealousy is the signal for creativity?
Hmm.
You got that? The reason that it is, think about it. When you get jealous, you go, ooh, that person is, and what you're really registering is that the other person is getting something that you can't have. They're getting somebody's attention. They have a new car. They have a relationship. They're getting something. They have money that you can't have. Well, who's the person who's getting in the way of you having it? Yourself.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So whenever you feel jealous, the signal is, if I want something like that, then I need to move whatever's in the way between me and having that. Therefore, I have to get creative. So the signal of jealousy is creativity.
Hmm.
That make sense to you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right.
I still get my arms around it, but yeah, it makes total sense.
Well, just I don't know if you ever experienced jealousy, but the next time you do, just stand back for a minute and say, oh, I'm thinking that this person's getting something that I can't have. Now, what if I could have it? What would I, you know, how would I feel, first of all? And secondly, what would I need to do to have it?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when you do that, you realize you don't want exactly what the other person has, but you identify what you want and you go ahead and get that, and it makes you feel even better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, another thing in working with partnering, which I think we all talk about, is to assume positive intent. Whenever we react emotionally, we have a tendency to think that our partner has some kind of negative intent. You know, oh, you dissed me, you hurt me, you spoke disrespectfully to me, and you got some kind of satisfaction out of that.
You're just being a jerk.
Right. Instead, we need to assume positive intent. The person maybe didn't intend to do what they, wasn't aware. And so we can help them with their awareness with the proviso that we don't give help that isn't asked for. You always have to make sure that the person wants your help. Otherwise, it'll get blocked. And it's a good way to get into a relationship is to give somebody help when they haven't asked for it. Woohoo! You get into an argument every single time, a big argument. All right, so another thing is to be honest and responsible. And when you're honest, it's not like, David, I'm going to tell you that the way you pick those boogers in your nose really upsets me. That's not the honesty that I want. What I want is honesty with myself and responsibility with myself. I didn't behave the way I want to. I'm going to forgive myself. Then I'm going to apologize. And I'm going to decide what I'm going to do next time. The two saddest words in any language have been identified as if only. If only I hadn't done that. If only I hadn't said that. If only I had done something. And the reason they're sad is because they focus us backwards. And what we need to do is focus forward in conscious spiritual relationship. And so we want to replace those two words with two other words, next time. Next time, I'm going to do this. Next time, my behavior will be different in this way. Now, often, if we decide we're going to be different next time, then we couple that with a request for the other person to be different next time, too. And we think that we're being loving by asking for that change. And I want to be really clear that asking somebody to be different than they are is not loving. It's okay to ask for, but it's not loving. Because loving involves respect. And respect means that I take you as you are without trying to or needing to change a hair on your head. So it's really, really important that I focus on me and my change, and that's the gift I can give spiritually as well as personally in relationship.
Mm. Yeah. How about fear? What's the signal of fear? What does that mean?
Well, my understanding of the signal of fear is it's like the caution light at an intersection. It says, wake up. Pay attention. You may be entering new territory. There is, of course, the very physical fear of I'm in danger. But the other fear also is that something is changing. Something new is coming up, and I need to be prepared for that. I need to behave consciously and so forth. And fear is very interesting because we tend to want to hide from fear. And as I said before, the principle is that you have power in the present. And what I learned to do, I learned years ago that when you operate on the motive of fear, you're guaranteed to create the thing you're afraid of. And what that led me to do is whenever I notice that I'm afraid of something, then I step into it immediately. All right, that's the next thing I need to learn about. And that includes when we're talking about spiritual guides and conscious relationship, it includes stepping into the fear of speaking up for myself or saying no to my partner if that's what's right for me or standing behind something that's important to me. And that's really, really important in terms of dealing with fear in relationship and not giving over to it. My aim in working with emotions is to become the master of my emotions. They are tools. And when I understand them and work with them and learn from them, then I use them as tools, which makes me the master of the emotion instead of me being the victim of my emotions.
Mm. Now, I'd like to ask you about one of the more difficult ones. How about shame?
Well, my learning is that shame is not a real emotion. It's a synthetic emotion. And a real emotion is marked by having two aspects, a positive and a negative aspect. anger, for example, we're very familiar with the negative aspect, but the positive aspect is that it pushes us to action. Well, what is the positive attribute of shame? Does it make you feel good? Does it get you to do anything besides hide? There's no positive side to shame. And what it really is a computation that there is something wrong with me. And we often confuse shame with remorse. You know, animals don't feel shame. They feel remorse. If your dog gets a roll of toilet paper and shreds it all over the house and you come home, they hang their head and tuck their tail in, it's because they're remorseful. They wish they hadn't done it. They wish they hadn't displeased you. But they don't think of themselves as a horrible dog who's just a cracked vase that will never get any better. They don't do that. Human beings do that, and I can't go into it now, but there are various points in our lives in which we can learn that shame due to circumstances, what happens in our lives. And so it's not real. And what we really need to do with shame is to recognize that it's not real. To work with the remorse instead. The signal of remorse is I've done something I don't want to do and I need to take a look at it and change my course so that I do something different next time, and I also need to forgive myself. That's the signal of remorse. So shame actually doesn't do anybody any good. It's not even real, and we need to work with other aspects of our life. Just let that shame go and take power by saying, okay, maybe I did that and I feel like I'm a bad person, but I can make a different choice for next time. And you use your emotional reaction to set up what you're going to do next time. And the spiritual principle there, and it's my sign-off on the radio program, as you know, David, is to pay attention to what you want to become and not to what you want to overcome. So if I feel shame, for example, I could say, David, I have a problem with shame. Could you please help me understand my shame? Could you please help me look at it? Here it is again. Let me tell you how the shame came up. What I'm doing there is I'm focusing my attention on the shame. And we know a spiritual principle is that whenever I focus attention on something, it tends to grow because I'm feeding it energy. So using the principle, pay attention to what you want to become and not to what you want to overcome, then what you do is you say, all right, if I didn't feel shame, if I didn't feel something was wrong with me, what would I be feeling? How would I do things differently? And focus there and feed that energy, and you become a non-shamed person. I know this can be done because I grew up in a very dysfunctional family, came up with lots of shame, and I've managed to move it on out and replace it with responsibility and choice making and focusing on what I want to become.
You said your goal is to be the master of your emotions and to use emotions as tools.
Yes.
So if you are the master of your emotions,
yes,
does that mean that they don't control you and that you take them as signals and act on them and you don't feel bad and you have control over how you feel? What does that really mean, to be the master of your emotion?
Well, it doesn't mean that I don't have emotions anymore.
Oh, darn.
Because you can't get rid of them. What all of this does is allow you to work with them. I like to look at the human being as like a channel for emotions, like a riverbed is a channel for water. And the emotions come up, and they're supposed to flow on downstream. They're not supposed to dam up and run over and ruin my life, which is what a lot of us do, especially with what we call so-called negative emotions. All right? So I have the emotion. Then I know what the signal is. Then I work with, I do something about the signal, as I've been describing. And then I can ask myself, what does this experience and this emotion, what are they trying to teach me, right? I had an experience with a couple not too long ago. The woman, I'd been working with them in this way, and the woman came in and she said, you know, I had an argument with my husband. And my husband talked to me in such a way that when I backed off from the argument, I was sitting there going, he's not talking to me like I'm an equal. Well, then she knew that there's a principle of resonance in the world and in the universe, and that if there was no truth to her being unequal, then she wouldn't have reacted to her husband's statement at all. So she began to look for, what's the truth in this? How is it that I might, is it possible that I might think that I'm not equal? And she'd had a very rough early childhood. Her father was absent. Her mother wasn't attentive. And she basically was raised by a sister who was a couple years older than she was. And she kept trying to keep up with that sister. And, of course, it was totally impossible when she was 3 and the sister was 5 for her to be able to keep up. And so she developed the notion right then that she wasn't equal. And this interaction, this argument with her husband, brought that up through her anger. She got, he's treating me like I'm not equal. And it suddenly popped that she had been keeping herself from her full flowering in the world. And within, I think about 5 or 6 days of that, she got some incredible offers that were of a much larger scale than anything. She's in public relations, of a much larger scale than she ever had before.
Mm.
And that's a spiritual use of emotion, too, working with the principle of resonance.
Yeah,
I want to tell you one other thing. I had experience with Seymour Borstein, who is a psychiatrist married to Sylvia Borstein. She's the founder of Spirit Rock, and she's written many books. And they've been married something like 52 years. And I heard Seymour say something that I think is really key in conscious relationships and in dealing with emotions. His statement was, whenever you talk to your partner, talk to them in a way that you know they will love to hear what you have to say.
Now, well, that's a tall order.
That is incredibly difficult to do,
mm-hmm.
but really focuses you in on the love and what the larger purpose of relationship is, that you're not just there to argue about things or get your way or feel comfortable. That's not what it's about. You're there to learn how to love and how to be intimate.
Mm. Yeah. And that's the spiritual role of relationships. And, you know, Harvo Hendricks was, his program was a couple of days ago, and
mm-hmm.
I asked him, you know, what's the spiritual purpose of relationships. And he quoted all the religious disciplines and all the philosophers, and it just boils down to one thing, and it's love. That's the end result. That's the destination. To practice love, to experience love, to be love, to give love, to receive love.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I plan to mention today is we featured Michael Brown, who's the author of The Presence Process and The Radiance of Intimacy. We also had Harvo Hendricks and Helen L. Hunt. Wonderful, wonderful material and people, and a lifetime of dedicating helping people with relationships, as I know you're aware. I heard you mention on that session that you'd taken 5 Imago relationship courses. With many different with a few different partners anyway. But
yep.
Michael Brown, in The Radiance of Intimacy, he says the point of all intimacy is really to prepare ourselves for the deep intimacy with God or all that is. And he says you can't keep anything hidden in this ultimate relationship. So that's what we need to gain practice in through our earthly relationships. So when we're consciously relating, we need to be honest and responsible and spontaneous, and we need to behave with integrity. And that means we're living according to our ideals and principles, and our unit self is strong in the unity. And interestingly, these four things, being honest, responsible, spontaneous, and having integrity, they're the four main building blocks of self-esteem. So when we operate this way within relationships, using our emotions as guides and as our user's manual, then we simultaneously build our self-esteem, feed our unity, build up our unit selves, and prepare ourselves for the ultimate relationship.
What would you recommend for the many folks that are just plain uncomfortable with their emotions and they get overwhelmed easily by them, and you know, they'd rather not. I mean,
that's a great question.
They would love to be masters of their emotions, but these emotions are just so strong and so uncontrollable. What would you say to them?
Well, my goal with Full Power Living, my radio program, is to awaken the world to the power and importance of human emotions. And here's my take on that, David, and it's a great question. The take is that emotions are not going away, and they are energy, so they are constantly working inside of us. And if we position ourselves to ignore or hope they'll go away or downplay them, then we are depriving ourselves of an incredible amount of richness and depth, and we are continuing our sleepwalk through life.
Yeah, but what about people that think this is too rich and too deep and, you know, they like to feel less?
You know, it reminds me when my son was in 6th or 7th grade, he came home with a bad report card one time, and I said to him, what happened? And he said, oh, it's so much work. And I got to thinking about it, and when he came home the next day, I said, you know, I've been thinking about what you said, and the world is about work. It doesn't matter if you decide to drop out and become a drug addict. You're still going to have to work to find your drugs, work to find a place to stay out of the way of the bad guys, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the world's about work. The question is, where do you want your work to take you? So for some of us, it is more difficult, based usually on how emotions were dealt with when we were growing up. But what we need to do is to, number one, accept that they're there, and number two, wake them up. And to do that, the principle is what you pay attention to, you tend to become. So start paying attention. Every 15 minutes, every hour, every 2 hours, up will come the emotions. Well, now, emotions, when they're held inside, tend to grow. So if you've been holding your emotions inside for a long time, they're going to be pretty powerful. And there's no escaping that. But just like that image of emotions, human beings being a channel like a riverbed for water, being a channel for emotions, the thing is that if you've dammed up those emotions, you're going to have a flood for a while. But then just like a river, the water will go back into the bounds, and it will never build up again. So a person who's really afraid of the intensity needs to work with somebody like you or me or a good a coach or a therapist just to keep you safe while you do this, but to be assured that once you wake up your emotions, you'll have such a powerful tool, you'll have such a more a deep relationship with yourself, and your life will be so improved that you don't want to go back. And I say that from experience. I grew up in a totally repressive family, and I'm a recovering angry person, and all this stuff was overwhelming, and once you go through it, it begins to take its place, and you begin to use it as a tool.
Mm.
That's my answer to that question.
Great, thank you. So would now be a good time to bring up some participant questions?
Yes.
We have a question here where there's a recent relationship breakup. And so now she is single. She's alone. And she's wondering that without the friction of the relationship, how can she move forward in her growth and learn from anger and fear and her emotions when she's not working them through in a relationship? She finds herself ruminating on her mistakes and on the past and feeling stuck without, you know, someone else to experience life with.
Uh-huh. Well, the key really is to work on your own emotions and anger and regret anyhow, whether there's a relationship there or not. And so key would be that, number one, you decide, all right, I had this experience. I mean, you've already had the relationship experience. You don't need another one right now. You need to integrate what you've already gotten. And so, all right, I had this. There are things that I'm not happy with. What could I possibly have been trying to teach myself? Remember, the earth is a giant school, by having that experience. How could I do things differently? If I had operated out of love for myself as well as the other person, how would I have done things differently? If I'm afraid now, what do I need to do in order to get myself to face my fear? Or act anyway, have the courage to act anyway. Courage is very important in relating spiritually and in using your emotions. And so you work with what you've got, and it sounds like this individual has a lot to work with right now, and if it's difficult to work alone, then get some kind of help. You know, go to a minister, go to a therapist, go to a coach, get some help. And but you can do it yourself by just focusing on what could I possibly have been trying to teach myself. The whole thing, the whole notion of energy sapping and manipulation, for example, the whole system that I developed for working with that so effectively came out of my first marriage, where I ended, when the marriage ended, I thought, that man manipulated me. I'm going to find out about manipulation. And so I started looking about manipulation, and I learned a lot. I learned where it came from and how it's done and how you tell the minute that somebody's manipulating you and so forth.
You became an expert.
I also learned the first rule of manipulation, David, which is that it takes one to know one.
Uh-huh.
So I had to look at my own manipulation, too. So, you know, there's always... there's always material to work on, and to prepare for the next relationship, start getting the material from your day-to-day present moment now, and then you'll be ready to do that in your next relationship as well.
Yeah, and when she finds herself ruminating on the past, and focusing on what she wants to become.
Yes, she's doing the if-onlys, I think.
Yeah.
And it's just a choice. You can... But here's another thing that's really powerful. Ask yourself, as you're going to sleep at night, you know, ask your higher self, show me what I need to learn from this. I don't want to keep going over and over this. I want to learn and move on, so show me what I have to learn. And often people will come up with understanding and what they need to do within a very few days of just doing that each night before you fall asleep.
Hmm. Yeah. So Cheryl is asking about the changing nature of emotions. And when you make a decision based on emotions, well, if emotions change, then, you know, how can you make a permanent decision, you know, based on your emotions? And she continues to talk about how, you know, commitment in a relationship and people destroying families, you know, because of how they feel, and giving the power of emotions to control their lives, and I'm not just feeling it anymore in this relationship, you know, things like that. But I think it's a great question about, well, you know, emotions change. So how can we use them in decision making?
Well, interestingly, the less in charge of my emotions I have been, the more changeable they are. And the more I get in charge or master my own emotions, the less changeable they are. But the other aspect of this is it strikes me that the question is about mixing up the the brain work and the emotional work. You know, I'm going to make a decision. And also there may be an aspect of I've got to make the right decision. Here's what I've learned in terms of emotions. If I'm not making a decision about something, I'm usually riding the fence. And it doesn't matter, riding the fence meaning I'll do this or I'll do that. And it doesn't really matter which you do, this or that. All it matters is that you get off the fence. So let's say you jump over to this. And you're there, and immediately it doesn't feel good to you. You know you've jumped off on the wrong side, and then you can go to that. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, your emotions, if you're relying totally, how do I say that? I have come to rely totally, almost totally, on my emotions to make decisions. But my emotions are working with me as my tools. For example, when I married my husband, I was going to rent my house out. But then I thought, how would I feel to sell it? And my emotions calmed down. I started feeling really good and solid. And so I ended up selling the house, and that's what was right for me to do. One of the things that this question brings up is our ability to listen to our inner voices. And there are many different inner voices, and I think this individual needs to first sort through which voice, internal voice. We have the voice of our child self, our teenage self, our parents, our cub masters, our choir leaders, etc. We have many voices inside of us, and we need to learn which voice to listen to. And to me, it's the one that causes me to feel the best. And it turns out to be my mature voice, my adult voice. And I think that's what the problem is here, is that this individual or the people around her, I'm not sure which, listens to too many voices. You need to start honing down on the one voice that you want to listen to, and then your emotions won't be running away with you like that.
Hmm. Great. We have a question from Jen about learning to trust and moving past the fear of betrayal in a relationship. So the emotion that she's experiencing constantly with her partner is, you know, fear of betrayal, and that's not really grounded in reality. And what can she do with that?
Well, as a formerly not very trusting person, here's what I've learned. I've learned that trust begins at home, that we usually talk about trust, can I trust the other person? But the real issue is that I don't think I can trust myself. I can't trust myself to deal with whatever I might experience if things don't turn out the way I want them to turn out. And until I learn to trust myself that I can handle life, I will not be able to trust another person. So the real answer there for Jan is that she needs to really work on trusting herself.
Mm.
Apparently, if you've got a partner that you don't trust, then, you know, I don't know what the circumstances are, but you're not trusting yourself. I mean, if I were totally, let me give an example here about trusting yourself and living with courage. When I met my husband 15 years ago, he's a wonderful, wonderful man, but he had been smoking for 30 years. And when he started talking about marriage, I'm a person who can't stand being around cigarette smoke. And he knew that about me. But he started talking about marriage. And I thought, how am I going to do this? You know, because if I ask him to stop smoking for me, then likely what will happen is we'll get married and he'll fall back to smoking, and I'll be in a situation where I've made a commitment to somebody who's a smoker, and that's not going to work for me. So how do I use my own requirements, like you talk about in your book, David? How do I use my own requirements to have a non-smoking relationship without putting this on him? How do I work with my own trust of myself? How do I love myself in this situation. And here's what I decided to do. I made a policy for myself. And the policy that I told him is, I love you very much. I want to be in relationship with you, but I need to advise you that I don't live with or marry anybody who smokes. Okay? Now, I was pitting my relationship against his 30-year cigarette habit, and his children, some of them said, man, I wouldn't do that. You're going to lose. But I had the courage to stand behind myself. And I'm here to tell you that he not only stopped smoking, he hasn't smoked for 11 years now. Mm-hmm. And he did that because he decided that that was important to him. Well, now, Janice, in a similar situation, if she doesn't trust her partner, then she's not loving herself to take action on that. She either needs to decide, it's kind of like getting on an airplane, you know, where you have a pilot and there's no way you can control the airplane. You either have to decide to let the pilot fly and trust the pilot, or you're going to make yourself an absolute wreck. But you're already deciding to be on the plane, so you've got yourself set up. So in this case, I think either decide to trust and work on trusting yourself, or get off the plane.
Right. That's the ultimate safety and security, is knowing that you can make it on your own without the relationship. So even if you do get hurt or betrayed, you know, you'll be fine.
But remember that emotions are in response to the stories that we tell ourselves. Ultimately, when we're working with emotions here, ultimately it's likely that this person has been betrayed before. And what we do, so they have a belief in betrayal. Sooner or later, somebody's going to betray me, so I better stay on my guard. And even if it appears that the person betrayed you and then you developed that problem, if you really look at yourself, there'll be something in your subconscious about betrayal. So it's come up now so that you can work on the issue of betrayal yourself. How do you betray yourself? How much can you trust yourself to do what's right for you instead of putting it off on the other person, regardless of how they've operated?
Hmm. Yeah.
Does that make sense to you, David?
Total sense, absolutely.
Right.
So that's all the questions that came in from participants.
Okay, well, I have a couple more things that I'd like to talk about, and one is the 72-hour rule, which I think is a wonderful, wonderful tool, and you can, and it involves emotions as well in relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it works with what happens in human beings. It takes about 72 hours, which is 3 days, for new information or risks that we've taken or choices that we've made to move through us. And we have a certain pattern that we follow whenever we make a choice or take a risk or get new information. For example, let me just use this example. I take the risk of putting my ideas out at this conference. Now, what will happen with the 72-hour rule usually is that within an hour to a few hours from the time I do this, what I'm doing right now, a voice will come up inside of me. Oh, my gosh, you forgot to say that. Oh, you didn't say that that way, did you? Oh, my gosh, maybe people, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And we do this in relationships, too. And what we're experiencing is the same thing as in physics. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. We're having a negative reaction. And during the negative reaction, what most people feel like they want to do is go back and make amends, make changes. Oh, you know, I really meant to say this, we say to our partner. And what happens is it stimulates arguments and difficulties in relationship. So what you really want to do is to recognize that whenever you take a risk, then you're going to have a negative reaction. Now, here's how I've learned to get through the negative reaction and not make changes. I go back and say, how did I feel at the moment that I took this risk? Well, right now I'm feeling very good. So likely, at the end of 72 hours, I'll feel the same way. But in the meantime, until 72 hours, I'm not going to pay attention to this or make change. I'm going to refocus my attention and go do other things. Now, if at the end of 72 hours I still feel terrible, I can make changes then. And what generally happens is by the end of 70, and in the meantime, I'm not going to talk with anybody about it, because if I talk with somebody, I'm going to get their idea of what they think happened and their opinion of what I should do, and I don't get to sort it and work with it myself, which is the point of the whole thing. And usually by the time people get to 72 hours, they don't even remember what they were agonizing over. They're fine with it. And so this way, you know, your emotions come up of, oh, no, and you maybe you have shame or remorse or whatever, and instead of catering to the emotions, you recognize that they are there to tell you that you've taken a risk and that maybe you did something incorrect, but you need to give it time to sort through your system, and so you can then wait the 72 hours, and then if you need to do something different, you can do it. And in terms of being conscious in relationships, this 72-hour rule is a tremendous tool. It saves so many arguments, and it still gives you the opportunity. And you can write anything down during this time if you want, but don't share it with anybody because you're working on it internally. And especially if both people in a relationship will do this, the amount of emotional friction in their relationship will drop by about 75%.
Excellent, yeah. And great tool for becoming the master of your emotions. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, it's really, really wonderful.
All right, so anything to say in closing, Eileen?
It's been an absolute pleasure, and I want to convey, you know, I used to be all afraid of emotions. Like I said, I was a recovering angry person. I was all tied up in knots, and I started looking into emotions, and eventually my son gave me the term of the emotional pro, and I like it because I've worked for 35 years learning about emotions, and we tend to put them in a position where they are powerful. They can take us over. And I want to be really clear that that's a decision that we make, and that doesn't have to be so. That I can choose whether I get angry or I laugh about something. I am the person who's living this life. My emotions are not living the life for me. And for anybody who's on this in this workshop here with me, if your emotions are running your life, they don't have to. And they don't have to run your relationship. What they're there as your tools, and put them in the position of helpers. Get in charge of them. There's a principle that's, that the when we're given a talent, you know, everybody has a talent. You have a responsibility with a talent to be in charge of it. And emotions are like a talent, and we have a responsibility to be in charge of them for ourselves and for our relationship and for the betterment of the world. That's what I would say.
Wow. Great message to end the program with.
All right.
So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested in Eileen's work, you can check out her book, Happiness is a Decision of the Heart. And her bonus is Relationships and Consciousness Wisdom from 13 Top Experts. That's available through the bonus link. And please give us your feedback on this program, and I will pass it along to Eileen. Click on the feedback link. And very easy form, just let us know what you thought. And Eileen, thank you very, very much. Outstanding program. You are certainly the master of articulating emotions.
Thank you for that compliment. It has been my deep pleasure to work with you, David. Thank you so much for offering me this opportunity, and I want to encourage everybody to help me spread the word to wake up to our emotions and what fantastic, wonderful friends they are.
And I encourage you to go to Eileen's website at www.emotionalpro.com and get on her mailing list. She has a great radio show, Full Power Living, and it's worthwhile following, you know, the great guests and programs that she has. So stay with us. In 15 minutes, we're going to talk with Helen Fisher about why him, why her, you know, the chemistry of love. Thanks for joining us. We will talk to you again shortly.